Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to the Chats That Matter podcast, the only podcast exclusively for employees of Cincinnati Bell, Inc. That's CBTS, Onyx, Wine Telecom, and of course, Cincinnati Bell. As I mentioned in our last episode, during September, we are highlighting women in tech and in the business space. We recently had an opportunity to sit down with Lisa Wong, co-founder and CEO of Popface, to chat about her experience being a successful woman in tech. Lisa has over 25 years of experience in the gaming industry. She's worked on multiple Star Wars titles, NBA titles, and Call of Duty. So without further ado, let's settle in and take a listen. So you are the founder and CEO of Popface.
And one of the co-founders.
Yes. One of the co-founders.
We have three. There's three of us.
Oh my gosh. Can you tell us a little bit more about Popface?
So we are a digital distribution platform that allows any creator to make their brand automated, personalized, and interactive on a social platform that functions like a free-to-play mobile game.
Oh, wow.
So the way that it works is I like to call it like, it's almost like it's a marketing live-off dashboard if you're like running an always-on interactive digital celebrity. We're targeting like creators and influencers online first.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you're a YouTube star mm-hmm. and you realize like, hey, a lot of the YouTube technologies are like pointing me to try and be live more and more, that doesn't scale. But what if like interactive me could sort of share content, and I could share content in the form of a pop quiz.
Mm-hmm.
I can share content in form of an animated sort of react video. So I can watch a video and then animated me can sort of comment on it, right?
Wow, that's
cool. Do things like share pictures and talk about what the pictures mean to me. I'm essentially running a digital interactive fan club.
Yeah.
Right. That is always available to my fans. And I can update that content the same way I update social media content.
Yeah. So let me hit the rewind button. So tell me a little bit about you. It sounds like you have a really cool background and graphics and whatnot.
So I started in games in 1993. So when I graduated college, so I graduated from Berkeley with a degree in English Lit and a degree in communications. So really natural fit to go into video games.
Right, that makes sense to me. It's a straight line.
Yeah. not super straight. But I was always good at drawing and I always loved art. So I actually wanted to be an animator. I had applied to CalArts, which is a big sort of mm-hmm. animation school, and then realized like I can't afford CalArts. After I got in, I was like, wow, this is a very expensive, very expensive school. So I was able to get a deferral by, they said, if you got a job, like in the industry, we would defer you. And then, so I got my first job in the games industry, doing art. And then I just kind of never left. I actually never went to school because I just kept doing it on the job.
That's really cool.
Yeah. So then I worked at LucasArts and made a bunch of Star Wars games. And then I made a bunch of, and then I went to 2K Sports and I made
yep.
a bunch of NBA games. And then I did a few other startups, and then I did, Sony PlayStation R&D. So then that's when I started doing more research and development.
Mm-hmm.
So just several years of that, and then went to Activision, kind of did a similar kind of thing, for Call of Duty.
Spend a lot of time staring at that art. My boyfriend loves to play video games.
Yeah.
NBA 2K, that is his thing, and Call of Duty.
Yeah,
so,
really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's very specific. I did a lot of stuff with workflow and characters. So like for NBA 2K, it's motion capture.
Mm-hmm.
Like what is that pipeline? How do you get the basketball players, their data into a digital version? Like it's just basically, what are all the things you put together to try and convince someone that something looks or feels right?
Yeah. I'm always amazed when I watch him, which is frequently play stuff like Call of Duty or Far Cry, or like mm-hmm. how real it is and how
yeah.
real it seems. I mean, like, I think it was it Call of Duty World War II?
Yeah.
When they came out. Yeah. How real the streets looked.
Yeah. There's a
that
lot
kind of stuff. That's insane to me.
Like from when I started to where we are now, it's insane. But yeah, you're literally now replicating the real world inside mm-hmm. with a bunch of algorithms, like literally saying, okay, well, you know, you see things because light hits it, bounces back, and then gives you some data. So literally that's what's happening in the computer.
That is really cool. So part of why I was so anxious to talk to you today is, you know, I looked at your bio and you've worked on not only in a very male dominated industry, which is gaming and, mm-hmm. and tech, but you've worked on very male dominated titles.
So yeah.
like Star Wars, Call of Duty,
yeah.
I mean, like 2K, you know, all that stuff. And just reading it, I'm like, man, how in the world? It was probably like you and three other women.
Yeah.
But what
usually.
Was that like? Yeah.
It's a loaded question. I was fortunate because I've definitely had colleagues who have the kind of like nightmare stories. It's not my story to tell, but they've definitely had stories where like that is all kinds of illegal and bad. Yeah. And it just makes you just angry to hear it. And I wish, I've been doing this a long time, and I wish I could say like, oh, but it's better now because we're smarter, but we're not. We're just as bad. And now it's actually worse because of the internet.
Yeah.
It's actually, I would say it's worse. What I was lucky at, and this is not a solution. I was lucky because I actually had very good managers.
Hmm.
And so if you have managers that just shut inappropriate stuff down quickly, right when you get there, it makes a huge difference. And that happened for me. You know, I worked long periods of time at the companies I was at. And I would say like two instances right when I got in, when someone had said, you know, like when someone said something inappropriate, and you always had that moment like, did I just hear it? What? And you know, did I, oh, I'm new and I don't necessarily want to like be that person. And you know, and so you don't know, but like my manager caught it two different times. My manager, both times a different manager caught it, shut that down vocally and publicly. And they outranked everyone. So when they did that, they drew a very clear line of what they thought was acceptable. And like no one cared about how I felt at that point, but they sure as hell cared about what he felt.
Yeah.
Right? You don't want to look bad in front of him. And then that really just like gives you enough time to sort of find your feet and kind of establish yourself. And it helps. I would say a lot of times because I was very, and this is not like, you should be allowed to be however you are. Mm-hmm. I just happened to be a very sarcastic person at work.
Yeah.
And so that's not a deliberate choice. That's literally something that you realize lots of times, depending on where you are, if you were just quick on your feet and you were able to come back at something, it could shut things down in a way that is diplomatic and funny and still kind of like let people know, like, I caught what you said. But that shouldn't be necessary. It's just what it is.
Yeah.
But I would say like definitely the managers made a huge difference. And partly my own personality kind of probably helped. But I think the other things that I think people are concerned about for a woman is the unconscious bias stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you sit there and say, well, what does a leader look like to you, and whether you're heard, that's different and that is hard.
Mm-hmm.
I think people are working on that.
Yeah.
But obviously the numbers don't look any better now than they did before.
Yeah.
When I started, I would say there was about the same amount of women when I started than it is now, which is not great.
No, that's not great at all.
Yeah, that's not like, fantastic. I think it's scary to be a woman that's vocal on in public. And because of social, it's kind of even more so.
Absolutely.
Because the thing that sucks about, there's so many things, but one of the things that sucks about being a woman in a minority in any space, right, is that that dude that you hired, that sucked, right? Like he was awful. And they just go like, oh, I'm just going to call him Chad. Chad was terrible at his job, right? Chad doesn't end up representing all Chads, nor does he represent all guys. And no one ever sits there and goes, oh, that's the last time we're going to hire a guy named Chad. I mean, that really didn't work out for us, right? But because there's so few women, that even people who like you will go like, oh, I just don't trust the woman to come in because last time we hired this woman, she was really bad. And you're like, but I hired you and I was awesome. And he's like, oh, that's true. It's like, why can't I represent?
Right? Yeah.
Why is it like, and it's, I don't know. It's just what happens. Like that represents every single woman. And because there's like five of us, well then, you know, well then.
It's just not fair.
Yeah. 20% of women suck.
Yeah.
So it's, you gotta get the numbers up, and like you have to, everyone, even other women, have to consciously unwind the thing of like that one person wasn't great.
Yeah.
Right, that one person, that they don't represent every single person, and you have to be willing to get over that. I think it's the what's the thing they did in orchestras where they started doing the blind auditions?
Oh yeah,
right. That's like a famous study where they found like, okay, all the orchestra players were mostly male, and they said, oh, men have, and they gave all the reasons why men were better musicians, and then they started doing blind auditions where you literally couldn't see how the person walked on stage, nothing, right, behind a screen, and then suddenly, hey, we are getting parody. right?
That's incredible. Yeah.
Yeah. So like these are known things. It's literally all, both men and women have biases they bring to the table in this.
Yeah.
And where we are right now, we're still used to not seeing women have authority or in power. Yeah. We have visceral reactions to that. And this is a whole thing I heard recently, which is John Mulaney made a really great joke about it. But it was basically like where in the subway systems in New York, where the commands were given in a male voice, but basically the instructions were given in a female voice because people didn't mind being like informed of something from a woman, but they didn't like being told what to do.
That's interesting.
Right? And you're like, oh, that unpacks a whole lot. Right? Like, that could explain why we don't like women in power, because we don't like women telling us what to do.
Yeah.
Right?
It's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a great answer. And I think that we're, as a company, we're kind of looking at our numbers and our figures and how many women are in the company, and minorities in general, to be honest. And it looks a little grim. And I think we're in a good spot when we have great leadership that recognizes that. And then we're like, we need to fix this. Like, they're very conscious of the change. It's just, you know, while they're trying to increase, you know, numbers and increase quality candidates and things like that, at the same time, we have women who are in positions where they're like, I can't get above director.
I think it's, again, like where, so like right now, you know, we're a startup, right? So we're raising capital.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say like everyone is generally like pretty nice, but you kind of sometimes go like, what you don't know is unconscious bias.
Mm-hmm.
Like, would you ask me the same questions? Would you find this as challenging? Would you just, do you take my experience for granted? Like, would you just like assume or do you feel the need to challenge me? Right.
Yeah.
And I feel like lots of times there is that, right? Where like the dudes can come and sit there and say, I did this, this, and this, and this. Everyone goes, that's awesome. You're brilliant.
Yeah.
Right. And the woman will say that and they'll be like, oh yeah, you must be really smart. And then they have to test it.
Yeah.
Right. They have to test it. That's the hardest thing to unpack. Right. Mm-hmm. Because you don't know when you're there. Right. You don't, and they don't know that they're doing that.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like everyone's idea of what normal is. Right. Something just doesn't feel right. Well, why doesn't it feel right? I think a lot of times people just don't get past that. Oh, my gut. And I've always trusted my gut.
Yeah.
Right. And to kind of deconstruct that on the fly, if you've never had to do that. Right. And I think most women, most minorities, most people who don't identify as straight, right? They're, it's not that, hey, you're naturally a better, more empathetic person.
Mm-hmm.
It's the fact that your personal safety has generally been a big part about you trying to figure out how the other person feels about you.
Yeah.
So that you can position yourself in a way that you're safe, right? So because of that, you just learn how to do that. And I think if you didn't have to do that, then it's like one of the things that's been so interesting recently is like when with people talking about sort of their experience sort of as women, where even, you know, their colleagues, their friends, their partners, their brothers who knew them for a long time said, I never knew these things happened to you. And you'd say like, well, people started like getting this like mass amount of like, of course these things happen. You just live through it. This one woman, she was in sciences. She kind of broke down all the things she did to try and make people comfortable while she was sort of, you know, in the sciences. And then I just read it and it was, and you know, she did okay in her career, right?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, I did every single one of those things. She's right. Right? Like you kind of like redirect a conversation, you kind of joke, someone does this.
Yeah.
I had a friend who talked about how she was sort of, you know, it was a networking friend sort of thing. And the guy had just very casually said, oh, I could never work with you because you're too cute and I'd find it distracting. Right. And he thinks that's a compliment. Didn't mean that he didn't think she was smart. You know, like clearly admiration, but it's that kind of thing of like, oh, I could never. And it's just like, yeah, but you don't realize like you might be joking, but I don't know you're joking. And now I'm uncomfortable because, and I do want that job because you're actually fairly high ranking and I need to network with you and you've hired your buddy and you won't hire me because I guess you would find me distracting. Right. That's a lot to unpack. And, and he just kind of tossed it off. Like he didn't think about it.
Yeah.
He wasn't trying to be a jerk. I'm sure, you know, he doesn't think he's a jerk. He would be able to say, but I have a daughter, right?
Yes.
You can do the whole thing. And I used to, after this big conference where it was, we'd all have our weird little things and we wouldn't be sure if it was happening to us in vacuum. So like me and my friends would kind of get together after some of these conferences and we would share stories. And that's when it would be funny.
Yeah.
At the moment, you're just kind of shocked. And then afterwards, you're like talking. But like she had told some story about how she, so her job was to sort of like match up her people with like potential like good contacts, right? I don't want to like out her, so I'm just being very vague.
Sure.
But basically at one point she had gone to hear a talk and it was like a VC that was talking. So she had gone up to him afterwards to invite him to a mixer, and these tickets were hard to get. So, but she had them.
Mm-hmm.
So she goes, oh, they could meet some of the people that I represent and that would be really good. So she goes up to him and she goes, so I liked your points about XYZ. And then she's about to invite him to the mixer.
Mm-hmm.
And he just kind of looks at her sort of panicked and goes, I just want you to know up front that I have a wife and child, right? And you're like, well, that's a lot of assumption on your part.
Yeah.
Right?
A big assumption.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so like my friend was younger at the time and she was just like kind of weirded out going, did I do something wrong? It's like, no, you existed.
Yeah.
And he was afraid. And I just went, something bad happened to him before and he just can't handle it. So that's how he's handling it, which is really unfortunate.
Really,
and so I said, you know, the easiest thing, because I was older than her, so I was just like, the easiest thing for you to do is always lead with what you do. Stay on topic. And you know how those conferences have open bars? No, they don't.
Yes.
They do not have open bars. You will stay sober. And it's just like, you just do it. And does it, it's like, I don't know. I've never known it not to be like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like I'm pretty sure my male colleagues don't have to do that.
Yeah.
Right. But I do it.
And it would be nice to think about how much more productive we would be if we didn't have to consciously like every day overcome just little things or big things like conferences that you're constantly on guard and watching yourself.
Yeah. Am I framing this correctly, right?
Yeah.
Can I stay on topic? How good am I? And you do get better at it. And the whole thing is, though, as you said, there's a lot of people who just are good at their jobs and not good at that. And they have a harder time,
mm-hmm.
right? Because they're just like, I should be able to focus on my job. And you're like, that is true.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
That is true. You shouldn't have to have these people haunting your cubicles.
Yes.
But
we do, and that's reality. Yeah.
Yeah. And so how do you handle that? You have to have a manager that's on top of that. And the manager actually has to have enough weight, enough pull, and mm-hmm. enough respect, which in my cases were true both times.
Yeah.
That needed to be redirected. It happened fast. It happened publicly, right? Stuff was shut down. And then that's it. It never happens again.
And right? It's sad that in my brain, I'm thinking you are so lucky.
I am so lucky.
You're very lucky. And I consider myself lucky because I have a great manager and I've had great managers who have shut things down like that before too. And they were also women, which was kind of miraculous. And I think the one time that I worked in, I used to work in finance for a little bit and my team was all men and they were all too afraid to kind of buck that status quo.
Yeah.
And to shut that down. And I think I've never felt more uncomfortable in my life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, when I got out of that and came to Cincinnati Bell and I got really lucky and have a great manager and she will shut that down. And I'm like, man, it's really nice. And there's a huge weight lifted off your shoulders when you don't have to be the only person standing up for yourself.
You don't have to be the humorless bitch.
Yes.
Who can't take a joke.
Yes.
Right. And
exactly.
You're new and you're like, okay, well, I don't want to be that person.
Yes. Yeah.
Right.
You don't feel like you have to take it.
Yeah. Both times I had male managers. I remember like one time though, like, and I went back and like thanked them later because like a friend of mine had shared some story that was just so egregiously horrible that I think it was just so furious coming out of it. And I just kind of thought about like, because I'm never someone where something shitty happens to someone else and you go like, oh, it's because I did all these 15 right things and that's why it didn't happen. It's like, no, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
Right. You know, shitty things happen to good people all the time.
Yeah.
Because life is chaos.
Yeah.
So you kind of sit there and think, why did these things not happen to me? And I thought about it and I just went, oh yeah. Like I remember 1 week into the company, 2 weeks into the company, right? Where someone, they were faster than I was at like just being able to go like, ah, I don't think that's appropriate.
Yeah.
Right. So, and again, the public dress down, shame and can be useful.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so they do that and they're like ahead of it and they just make it a matter of fact thing. And it just,
yeah,
everyone gets over it.
Yeah.
Right. So,
and I think you said a lot of like good stuff kind of packed into that question. And this is a very leading question. You know, being a successful woman in that space, do you have any sort of words of advice or thoughts for, you know, kind of our women who are trying to kind of move from that communications practice into the tech space?
That's a tough one.
It's heavy, I know.
Yeah. Okay, so networking is key to success in any business, right? Maintaining mm-hmm. your network, keeping up to date with your network, where, you know, I've worked a long time and I realized, like, were it not for LinkedIn and Facebook, mm-hmm. For all the issues that it has, right, it kept me in touch with people for much longer than I probably naturally would have been able to keep in touch with them. Mm-hmm. And that has pretty much led to most of my opportunities from, I would say, like, the last time I actually, like, cold called, went into a job interview without someone actually recommending me was 2003.
Right?
Yeah. Like, that was a long time ago. Because after that, it was just all network. Like, someone told you about something, someone recommended you, someone. So I think, like, that's for anyone, obviously. I think for a woman, it's really, really important just because your network tends not to be as comprehensive mm-hmm. and people tend not to go out of their way to sort of elevate you. So, you know, being able to do that helps a lot. Find out who your allies are, right? Mm-hmm. Ask them for help.
Well, Lisa, we have taken up more of your time than we intended. So I so appreciate you sitting down with us. This has been great.
As always, thanks for listening to the Chats That Matter podcast. This episode was hosted by Annette DiTommaso. That's me, with editing and production by Matt Mulcahy. Special thanks to our guest, Lisa Wong. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts, please send us an email at ctmpodcast@sendbell.com.